Okay, folks, back to the motion on the board. Is there any further discussion? Is everyone clear as to the intent of the motion? Okay, I'm going to call a question here. Committee members, please indicate if you support the motion on the board. And those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 9-0-1. Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've had a great discussion here, and I think it was important to outline what we likely won't be moving forward with. I think it's obviously urgent and timely that we identify what we do want the PDT to pursue and what we see value in. I think my takeaway from this discussion has been a return to the first principle, and that is that we should be tracking catch and discards in this fishery with the highest possible resolution. There are trade-offs associated with that in terms of cost and a number of other things, but that should be our goal. I think it's the foundation of any fishery management plan, and particularly an output-based management plan. That accurate tracking of catch and discards is only more essential when we're dealing with ACLs, the likes of which we're seeing in some of these groundfish stocks. So I think we need to improve the resolution with which we track catch and discards on Georgia's Bank and give ourselves some options for how to do that. So with all that said, I'd like to make a motion directing the PDT to develop alternatives to revise the existing sector discard strata for Georgia's Bank and instead stratify discards on Georgia's Bank by statistical area or by groups of statistical areas with the goal of the highest practical resolution.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Give him just a minute to get it up. You want to provide a short rationale? We've beat this issue around for the last hour.
Keyword short. I think my rationale was largely in my comments ahead of time. I think this is something that can be done. My intent originally was to make this request directly to the Fisheries Service, but I do think there are things that we need to iron out with the expertise of the PDT in terms of what's achievable and what that request to the service ultimately should be. I think we've heard from the industry, and I think we all know that we're going to need to track several stocks on Georgia's Bank, particularly yellowtail flounder, very closely and have better information about catch and discards than we have right now, both from a fishing perspective and from a resource perspective. So I think this allows us at least to move forward towards that goal.
Okay, we're not quite at our noon point in the agenda, so could you keep it short, Dr. Pierce, and then I'm going to call a vote.
Yeah, I think the rationale for the motion is right on, and I agree with what Tom has said is our objective, absolutely, without question. However, I'm a bit uncertain as to what the plan development team is going to be able to do with this charge, especially in light of the points that they raised in enclosure number two, where they provide us with three very important bullets, and we've already referenced them. I guess I'm just wondering what Tom, as chair of the plan development team, is going to say to us after he meets with the plan development team, or what he says to the plan development team. I would think they might just repeat what they've already said. unless our intent is to say, move forward with this, and, oh, by the way, we intend to, we believe and we support an increase in observer coverage to get the sufficient number of trips to meet the 30% CV, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, are we going to be saying all of these things are acceptable to us, those three bullets? So it's to me, I'm left with an uncomfortable feeling. I don't know what the plan development team is going to be able to give us in light of what they've already said.
Good question. Tom?
Second or third shift? I mean, if the motion carries, we'll try and craft alternatives that address the specific language of the motion. I'm not sure that our caveats will change, but we'll develop alternatives that, you know, do this.
Dave?
Because it doesn't say, is this motion just for Yellowtail or is it for all stocks on Georges Bank?
I'm not sure. Perhaps Sue could jump in here. My understanding is that the discard strata are not stock specific. The stock areas are stock specific, but the discard strata are simply geographical areas and attribute. No. Then the clarification or the answer to that is that my intent is to make this specific to yellowtail flounder.
Dave.
Okay, so is the motion got to be changed then to say for yellowtail flounder? Okay, I think that narrows the scope here considerably. I mean, you're going to have different strata for different stocks. That would be potentially a gigantic undertaking. So this makes it only slightly undoable instead of totally.
Okay, any comments before we move the question? Okay, committee members, to the motion on the board, please indicate your support. Those opposed? And those abstaining? Motion carries 901.
So the next thing that I'd like to talk about is in the PDT report on page 5, there's a discussion about no possession of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder in fishing year 2013. We already have a measure that was proposed that is included in the framework document that would prohibit possession of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder in fishing year 2013 for 1 year only. This creates some problems with respect to accountability measures in sort of an odd way, in that, if you recall, earlier this summer we sent a letter to the service asking that they move George's yellowtail flounder, ACL, from the scallop fishery to the groundfish fishery. That has been done. And then the second part of our letter to the service asked that the scallop fishery be exempted from the accountability measure for their sub-ACL should they go over in 2012. So we don't know yet if that's been done. The service has not replied to our letter, and they have not published a proposed rule on that issue yet. But assuming that that gets adopted, that would mean that in fishing year 2013, there would be no accountability measure for the scallop fishery if they go over their Georges Bank yellowtail flounder sub-ACL. The rationale for allowing that was the argument that under the U.S.-Canada resource sharing understanding, if we go over the ACL in 1 year, there's a payback the next year. And the problem is that if you have zero possession in fishing year 2013, as is proposed by this measure, that has no impact on anybody. And so, effectively, you don't have a reactive accountability measure in fishing year that covers the fishing year 2012 catch in fishing year 2013, should zero possession be moved forward. So the issue that's raised is that if you want to include zero possession of George's Bank yellowtail flounder in fishing year 2013, then you need to spell out what is the reactive AM. Should we go over the ACL in 2012, what is the reactive AM for that stock in fishing year 2000 that would be implemented presumably in fishing year 2013? So this is kind of an odd quirk where, because of a change we're proposing for 2013, if it goes forward, it means we don't really have an effective accountability measure for overages that may occur in 2012. I don't know that we have a real good suggestion. You know, I think the PDT report says, well, you could, you know, put as an AM that you're going to close the eastern U.S. Canada area. Well, that defeats the whole purpose of the motion made earlier today to allow access to in parts of closed area 2, for example. So, you know, I don't know there's anything readily at hand here, a quick answer, but we need to talk about this and figure out how we want to deal with this. I don't know if the service has some comments that they want to make on this particular AM issue. They're the ones who first brought it to our attention.
So,
I'm trying to follow what you said, Tom. So in 2013, there's no possession limit. And in 2000, if the accountability measure is an overage deduction, there's a zero possession limit in 2014, then it doesn't mean anything. Is that what you're saying?
I think if you back everything up a year, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, the issue, oddly enough, is 2012. If this zero possession is adopted in 2013 and the scallop fishery gets a buy on the accountability measure for an overage in 2012 and we go over the ACL in 2012, there's no effective accountability measure in 2013. And I think, you know, honestly, we got to be a little bit concerned that we may go over the ACL in 2012. While the groundfish catches currently at this time of year are very low, the scallopers, I think, according to the most recent estimate, have caught something like 80% of their yellowtail on George's Bank, and they've caught roughly 55% of their scallops out there. And the groundfish fishery typically catches more yellowtail later in the year anyway. So, I mean, we can't just ignore it by saying, oh, we're not going to go over. I think we could be pretty close.
So.
So the accountability measure, the hard accountability measure that we have in the document is, as you pointed out, the eastern U.S. Canada area would close. But, you know, this, unless you can say that, you know, that accounts for 90% of the yellowtail catch or something to that point effect, I don't think that that's a sufficient reactive accountability measure. Tom's looking at me funny, but...
I'm not sure that measure applies now with the advent of sectors in...
Yeah. Well, we think it does. Gene's not here to talk to, and this is one of the issues
okay.
I wanted to speak to him about. So everything I say, I need to make sure that he's in agreement with. But the way we see it is the U.S.-Canada area, you know, everyone is subject to it at this point. So once the Georges Bank yellowtail tack is reached, the eastern U.S. area closes. The RA is required to close that area. But like I was saying, it doesn't seem like it's a sufficient enough accountability measure. There is other provisions in the regs where the RA may do certain things, like he has a proactive, there's proactive accountability measures in the sense that he could close areas. If he starts seeing that the yellowtail tack is going to be reached, he can close areas. implement trip limits, implement numbers of trips, and so forth, but it's a may. So it's unclear to us until we talk with legal counsel whether or not that would be sufficient enough for an accountability measure to meet Magnuson. And I should add, I should add that we can do that at the start of the next fishing year as well. So if we think that we're going to need it for the next year based on what happened in the previous year, the RA may be able to do that, all of those items.
So what's the committee think? Do you still want to consider this approach? Dave?
Well, I think there's two approaches. One is that we allocate the fish. That's one option. And the other is that we don't allocate the fish and have zero possession, right? Those are the two options in the document. I was trying to thumb through the document while we were talking, and I couldn't find it. Specific section, but I assume those are the two alternatives we have right now. And in one, if you allocate the fish, you have accountability measures that kick in automatically. In the other, you don't have any accountability measures that you can enforce other than closing Eastern Georges Bank, and that may not be sufficient. Is that where we are, essentially?
Yes, I think that's where we are.
So if we leave both options in the document, then it may come down at the end that the only option that's viable is to allocate the fish and have the accountability measures to satisfy the law, unless somebody comes up with a third alternative that I'm not seeing. So I would say for right now, we don't do anything. We leave both options in the document and see how this plays out.
Other thoughts? Dave?
Well, obviously this is one of the best examples of all regarding the problems of managing every stock with a hard TAC, especially when they get very low. We have to allocate infinitesimal amounts of fish to a fishery that results, therefore, in the high probability of massive closures, impacts on other stocks that are caught in a mixed stock fishery. This is the national standard number one guidelines at its best. By the way, the division has commented on the National Standard Number 1 guidelines, extensive comments on the guidelines, comments requested by NOAA Fisheries. God bless them. That was a good request on their part. So hopefully we'll see some changes, but certainly not in time for May 1, 2013. So I'm obviously not pleased with the fact that we would have to allocate small amounts of fish in a way that would result in bycatch fisheries only, however that may be defined, and all of the adverse consequences that will result. But then again, I don't like the no possession limit. I think the no possession limit basically is turning a blind eye. And I don't like turning a blind eye, pretending that something is not going to happen. That is discards of yellowtail flounder, Georges Bank specifically. And as the PDT notes on page 6 of their document, there's no incentive then to avoid Georges Bank yellowtail because there's no penalty, just no possession. Throw them over the side, and we have... The council, we have promoted discarding in our groundfish fisheries for many years because of the nature of our regulations. Unfortunately, huge amounts of discards, I think, have occurred because of our regulations. So no possession, I can't buy it. For now, sure, as David said, we can keep it in there and promote more discussion on this very important concept of no possession because I think it's going to come up with other stocks as well. Not just Georges Bank yellowtail, but I think other stocks too. We'll have this discussion of no possession versus bycatch only fishery, and what does that mean? So, I have no reason to strike it out yet. I want more discussion on this important issue, especially in the context of needed revisions to the National Standard Number 1 guidelines. And these two options that we have right now, I think, just highlight problems with those guidelines and the need for revisions. And frankly, a need for NOAA Fisheries to entertain in a very significant, meaningful way some of the suggestions offered up by the New England Council for revisions to the guidelines. And some of those suggestions, I think, would help get us away from this no-possession strategy or bycatch-only fishery. So keep it in for now. I'm not going to make any motion to strike it out.
Tom.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I agree with a lot of what Dr. Pierce and Dave Gaetho have said. I actually don't even think we've scratched the surface on the problems with associated with going to zero possession on this dock. I think we can have a much more comprehensive discussion of what it would actually mean to individuals, to all sorts of things. I mean, there are real problems with pursuing this, but I also agree at this time, I don't see any real urgency in taking it out. It can be explored and considered, but I just don't see in the end the council being able to pursue this approach and meet our mandate. So we'll go along with the approach keeping the two alternatives in it at this time.
Earlier today, we had some discussion about what is a bycatch fishery. We're going to be getting a report from the SSC next week with their recommendations on yellowtail. I'll follow up with you, Dave, but I mean, if there's not opposition to the concept, I would suggest we leave it in the document for the time being. Is any objection? Dave.
I agree with Dr. Pierce completely that we're going to run into this with other fisheries, and we have been unable to articulate any kind of a way forward with this dilemma, and it's been a dilemma for some time. It will continue to be a dilemma. I don't know how we work our way through it, but we have to, at some point, we have to confront this and decide what our policy will be. The only thing I would offer is that commercial fishermen told me before Amendment 16, the expression used was discarding fish is a crime against the planet. And there's nothing that we have done that I dislike worse than a policy that encourages discarding fish. At some time, we are going to have to decide just which way we want to go. It's one of these things where there is no good way. But we're going to have to confront it at some point. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to leave it in the document through at least next week. What's next, Tom?
So I've got a series of... hang on a sec. I got a series of things, some of these rather trivial, but I want to make sure I highlight them for the committee so they shouldn't take too long. If you look at the Framework 48 document, if you turn to page 30, where we talk about the scallop fisheries, southern New England, mid-Atlantic, windowpane flounder, sub-ACL, I just want to highlight something to you. The committee is considering an option which would allocate southern New England windowpane flounder to the scallop fishery. We brought some numbers forward to the committee meeting at the last meeting. Deirdre was at the meeting and asked a question about whether the numbers that were in the document, which I think was 32% of the southern New England windowpane, accounted for the general category trawl, dredge, catch over time. It turns out that 32% number did not. However, we don't have a long time series for what the general category scallop dredge catch was. So basically, we have bumped it up by an amount that is based on what was seen from 2004 to 2011. That increases the scallop fishery total to 36%. I just wanted to make sure the committee members noticed that, so you can object or not. The next question comes up. I'm going to move fast so nobody has a chance to think about it. The next question that came up, let's see, I think on page 47. At the last committee meeting, you guys passed a motion to change the minimum size limits. We already had an option in here that would change, and still have an option in here that would get rid of the minimum of size limits. And at the last committee meeting, you passed a motion to modify the minimum size limits, or at least many of them, not quite all of them. Those are shown in the table. But there was some discussion at the committee meeting and concerns about mesh size and the impact on minimum mesh. And so what we've done here is we've written in some draft text to try and clarify what the purpose of these minimum sizes is. And the reason we are writing this in here is to try and address issues that are no doubt going to come up if the minimum size changes with respect to sector operations plans. Now, these minimum sizes were selected because, based on the current mesh requirements, these minimum sizes are believed that they would probably just about eliminate regulatory discards almost completely. And so we wrote in some text here to try and explain why these changes are being made. And we just highlight that while sectors would not be prohibited from requesting exemptions from the current minimum mesh requirements, the expectation would be that before such a request would be approved, a sector would have to demonstrate conclusively that the exemption will not lead to increased targeting of juvenile groundfish. For example, I used two specific examples that are likely to come up, smaller mesh to target either Georges Bank haddock or redfish. The example might be they might approve using smaller square mesh to target these species, but perhaps not smaller diamond mesh because that would likely increase the discards of haddock. So what we're trying to do here, and we can either leave this language in or take it out or modify it however the committee wants, what we're trying to do is put something in the document that gives the service some idea of how to deal with requests to change the minimum size in the future should they come up with sector exemptions, so that they're consistent with what the council intends should this measure eventually get adopted. So this is the point we're trying to get at here.
David.
Yeah, Tom, you said that there would be no regulatory discards with the minimum sizes that are proposed in option two changes to minimum size limits, and the rationale says the minimum size limits proposed in this option are based on an analysis of the size of discarded fish and trawl gear in recent years. I guess I'm wondering what mesh size has been used within trawl gear in recent years that led to the conclusion that these would be the appropriate minimum sizes. I asked the question because Jimmy Odlin this morning made note of the fact that the Canadians, when they're fishing with 5.5 or 5.25 square, I think he said, they have far less discards than what we have in our fishery, which is a 6-inch diamond, primarily where we end up with high retention of smaller fish or large amounts of discards of smaller fish, sublegal fish. So, what's the reference here? What mesh size do all of these minimum sizes correspond? 6-inch diamond.
I believe the analysis, Fiona, I think the analysis Fiona did, I'll let her speak to it. she can tell you which years she used. In recent years, our minimum mesh size requirement has generally been 6.5 inches square or diamond in the cod end. There have been a few instances where there have been requests for exemptions, I think, to use 6-inch mesh in the diamond. 6-inch mesh in the cod end, primarily on George's Bank with a separator trawl to target haddock. And so the analysis she did was based on whatever was in the database, and most of it was based on those mesh sizes.
It's based on what? I'm sorry. Based on what mesh size?
There might have been a range included in there, but I'm trying to pull up my report so I can give you the actual numbers.
Well, I guess I'm suggesting that that the document reflect the mesh size apparently has been used in trawl gear in recent years. Once we have that information, it might help us reflect on perhaps the merits of a different mesh size to be required. Although, with that said, I note that Tom's staff has put in some valuable, very useful language on page 48 relative to exemption requests for the use of square mesh less than 6.5 inches to target George's Bank haddock, et cetera. So I don't know. I suppose I could see perhaps that's under full retention. Well, let me stop there. Just clarify it as to what actually those minimum sizes on the fish correspond to as a mesh size in the net.
So there was a range of mesh sizes that were looked at that went from 5.5 to 7.5 and over.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that, Fiona.
There was a range that were looked at, and I had them in different bins. If you keep, it should be the one after this graph. So there was 5.5 to 6, roughly 6.5, and then 6.5 to 7. So we went from, in total, 5.5 to over 7.5 inches. And these were done by species, and each species has its own graph like this showing the level of discards in each mesh size range.
But it doesn't indicate square versus diamond, right?
It does in the previous graph.
Oh, okay.
I don't believe there's a graph that shows bin by square and diamond, though, right? The two factors?
Not the two together, no.
Dave?
I had a question on the option to change the minimum size limits. My understanding when we voted this through is that these would be the most restrictive. In other words, they'd be the smallest, but we can change them before the final action. I want to make sure that's still correct because I don't support a number of these minimum fish sizes, but I wanted to get the analysis of the range.
That was my recollection.
Okay, I just wanted, again, stated on the record to be clear because I will, as an individual at least, be putting forward motions to have minimum fish sizes that will not compromise our ability with mesh size but will allow for retention of most of the marketable fish that are retained by the GIA.
Dave?
Yes, that was my motion, and you're correct. That is was the rationale.
Other, Sue?
Well, to Tom's question about whether or not this is something that should go in the document, we would support any guidance that the council would want to give us about some of these issues. The way it's worded now, though, it says the exemption is that, let's see, such a request would be approved, the sector would have to demonstrate conclusively that the exemption will not lead to increased targeting. I think it's difficult for the sector to demonstrate that prior to an action going in place, so what we would do is work with the sector and develop rules that, such as thresholds, for instance, to ensure that they don't go over a certain threshold. But oftentimes the agency develops that with the sector. So I just wanted to point that out.
Frank?
Yeah, just a point of order, and I wish Gene was here, because it may not make a difference, because status quo is always an option. But I would think status quo would be the most restrictive, and what we have on page 47 would be the least restrictive, not just the opposite. If you're lowering the size, it'd be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the least restrictive is the full retention with no minimum sizes, right? I guess it depends on what you look as restrictive, minimum size or retention, requiring retention.
So.
So is committee generally comfortable with the suggestions made by the PDT? Dave?
Well, I think Sue raises an important point. I mean, I think it has to be worded in such a way that people have to provide a reasonable explanation of why they want to use a smaller mesh, for example. So if they're going to target redfish, a scientific study has shown that, you know, mesh size X is ideal for targeting legal size redfish. If they want to target haddock, that mesh size X has been shown by a study to retain the maximum amount of legal size haddock while not retaining sublegal, I don't know, cod, yellowtail flounders, other things that might occur while targeting haddock. I think to demonstrate conclusively is a pretty high bar that probably, I don't think anybody could ever beat that. But I think you should have to cite some kind of study that backs up your claim for using that mesh. I mean, if you want to use 5 1/4 square mesh to target haddock, you cite a Canadian study that shows that this is the most. If they must have studies. I mean, they didn't pick the mesh out of thin air. And if, you know, we're doing a redfish study right now, which we're still waiting to have completed, you know, and hopefully out of that will come an ideal mesh size for targeting redfish, things of that nature. That would be my suggestion on the wording.
So is this verbiage you'd like incorporated in the framework or a recommendation from the committee to the service for approving a sector? I'm hearing Tom saying he's going to modify the language.
What I'll do is I'll try and edit the language a little bit. You'll get another crack at it either next week or at the October 11th meeting. And maybe if the service has a preference, they can give us a sentence to stick in here. I mean, the point we wanted to get at is that there was a lot of concern expressed by the committee that, quite honestly, at the groundfish advisory panel, that while many people supported revising the minimum size to reduce discards, they did not actually support, in most instances, reducing minimum mesh sizes in order to increase the harvest of smaller fish. So, you know, we're just trying to get at that point. Maybe we worded it a little too strongly here. We'll back it off a little, and maybe the service can help us out. And we just want to make that clear so that, you know, you don't wind up getting a lot of requests to use, I don't know, you know, 4-inch mesh to target yellowtail flounder or something like that.
David?
Yeah, well, clearly we're going to have to rely on some good cooperation between the regional office and sectors as sectors, what's the word I'm searching for, with good stewardship here, because while the words demonstrate conclusively may be inappropriate and unreasonable, there has to be some very, very good justification for the use of this exemption, since if indeed there is any targeting of winter flounder or plaice at 6 inches, or, in other words, I the table jumps out at me and it makes me break out into a cold sweat. You know, I've worked for like 20 years. Maybe 30 years with the New England Council to work on minimum sizes up to larger and larger sizes so we can at least get to 50% maturity. So when you see a table like this indicating a new minimum size of American plaice of 6 inches and winter flounder of 8 inches, I say, yay. So on its face, it's alarming. So the regional office has got a huge responsibility to make sure that whatever occurs through a sector request does not result in targeting of small fish and, of course, discarding of small fish that might still occur. I don't think that fishermen are going to target small fish because an eight-inch blackback isn't going to command much of a price. Nevertheless, so again, we're relying on the center to the regional office to be to do a good job with very little guidance from the council.
Like I just heard, significant guidance. Other comments about the two issues that Tom raised? Okay, sounds like we're on to the next.
So this next issue is not in the document. It's one that has bounced around over the course of several committee meetings. And if we don't resolve it today, we at least need to make a plan when we are actually going to resolve it. There was a request, I believe, from the Recreational Advisory Panel last May to ask that their accountability measures be treated in a way that's similar to how we treat some other accountability measures in the plan. They asked that if they exceed their sub-ACL, that an accountability measure not be triggered unless the overall ACL is exceeded as well. So this is something that we have written into the plan, I believe, for the scallop fishery sub-ACLs of yellowtail flounder. I think we're considering ideas like this for some of our other stocks, or have adopted ideas like this for things like the windowpane flounders and ocean pout. So the recreational fishery has asked that this be included. The groundfish advisory panel actually extended it a little and said, we ought to do this for everything. Now, we've tried to talk about this a couple times at the committee meeting, and we bumped it off. We have another recreational advisory panel meeting scheduled in a couple weeks. There'll probably be more recommendations coming out of that meeting. So maybe we want to do these all at the October 11th meeting. But in any case, we need to decide pretty darn quickly, because we're getting near the end of writing things up and getting them in the document.
My suggestion is we defer to the next meeting with a suite of alternatives and some membership from the recreational fishery here. Especially, we're going to have that meeting, you think, where? In Portsmouth or New Hampshire, Tom?
Yes, we're pretty sure it's going to be in New Hampshire. Not sure which city yet, so we're working on that.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like a plan. On to the hand gear fishermen.
This has gotten more complicated. So I'm not sure I can go into a lot of detail. We've received a couple letters over the course of the last few months from hand gear fishermen complaining about their accountability measures. Kind of got lost. I lost the letter here. So the first one is that they're interested in trying. Right now, if you're in a common pool, we have quarterly tacks, and when the quarterly tack is reached, you're stop fishing in the area. And so I think recently we wound up closing an area because the white hake tack was reached for common pool vessels. The hand gear A, we've received a request from a hand gear A fisherman suggesting that they should be exempt from the white hake quarterly tack. I suspect if you asked him, he might want to be exempt from all of the quarterly tacks. But, his argument is hand gear A fishermen catch very small amounts of white hake, so they should be allowed to continue fishing after an area is closed when the white hake quarterly tack is caught. And I don't know what the committee wants to do. Do you want us to try and draft some measures text that will accomplish this and bring it back in October, or just wanted to make sure that this was highlighted and brought to your attention.
Committee thoughts? Dave?
Well, I mean, it's white hake today. It could be something else tomorrow. I mean, I don't know where this all leads. And once you start carving out exemptions for people, I'm just raising that point. I mean, it just happened it was white hake that closed a trimester this time. But the next time it could be pollock or cod or haddock or who knows what. So do we do, we're going to go through this with every species? There is an alternative. You can join a sector. And I understand the issues of sectors and vessel monitoring systems and everything else, but, to say there is no alternative is not really a true statement.
Other committee members? Sue?
I think the issue that Mr. Stettner is raising is that there are other gears that are exempt, and the handline gear did not get included. And I'm not clear why, from the beginning, I think it was Amendment 16 that put in these trimester tacks, why hand gear wasn't included. And I wonder if it's because most of those vessels are now in sectors, so the few that are remaining don't catch white hake. So it's just kind of unclear why hand gear was never considered from the beginning as one of the gears, because there are other gears that are exempt from this trimester closure once we hit white hake.
Well, I think if you look, you'll see that in recent years, hand gear fishermen have owned about 3% of the white hake quota that's in the common pool. And don't forget that hand gear also are allowed to use tub trawls, which do catch white hake. I mean, admittedly, they're small amounts, but they are caught.
It looks like we're punting. Tom?
We're about a week away from the council meeting. I don't think that the, in all likelihood, the PDT is really going to move that far on this in that time. So, you know, maybe we'll have a more comprehensive discussion with it when some of these guys are in the room, and we can talk about it then, and maybe more fully understand the problem. But I don't see the urgent need to take action on this or to task the PDT with anything in the short time we have before the council meeting.
Committee members, I'm good with that approach. Okay. Well, we'll see if it comes up next week.